Hello everyone, just to remind you, I'm Diane Baker from the University of California, Davis. We have a brand new School of Nursing, Betty Irene Moore, and the Intel money set up our new School of Nursing, and we have been blessed to be the recipients of $100 million to establish the School of Nursing. This is by far and away the most money ever given to establish nursing, and our goal is to unleash the power of nursing to change healthcare. Today I'm going to be talking about human trafficking, and I'm glad that you're here and interested in this subject. It's kind of like when you travel on the airlines, we know you have many choices, and I'm glad that you chose this. The APH meetings are amazing in their diversity and subject content area. I'm going to discuss a little bit about what human trafficking is and explain how we engaged our public health nursing students in looking at and exploring the idea of human trafficking. Nothing to disclose. So human trafficking is actually modern day slavery, and it was an eye-opening concept for me to realize that there's so much human trafficking that goes on in the world, slavery today. And the greatest percentage and the biggest consumers of human traffic victims are in the United States. So while we have many things that we're number one in, we're also number one in consuming products of human slavery. It's really a very frightening situation. Victims can be trafficked for commercial sex or labor purposes, and traffickers use force, fraud, or coercion to achieve the exploitation of their victims. After drug dealing, human trafficking is the number one industry, criminality industry in the world. I believe that as we are talking, it's probably moved up to rank number one. And there's a very logical explanation for this. A 60-gram packet of cocaine can be sold one time to a consumer, a human victim, especially for sex trafficking, can be sold 30 times a day. So it's a much more profitable industry to enslave humans than it is to sell drugs. It's about a $9 billion industry, so there is a huge network of protection to keep this industry strong and to fight prosecution. Victims are usually among the most vulnerable and powerless in any country that they're coming from, including those that have been enslaved in the United States, and I'll give you an example of that in a minute. We think that there are around 800,000 to a million traffic victims brought into the U.S. every year, and these can include sex, agriculture, sweatshops, construction, car washes, domestic labor. We just had a case in Sacramento where women were transported in from India and held as domestic servants in the U.S., and also as sex slaves. They performed both of those indebtedness. Forced debt, and actually I discovered about 2 years ago that there are many nurses that come in from the Philippines, and many of you may work with nurses from the Philippines, and I'm by no means saying that all of them are here due to human trafficking situations, but there certainly is an industry where their jobs and positions are developed and they're brought into the U.S., and then they're indentured servants. No matter how long they work as a nurse, they can never get themselves out of debt for the transport to come to the U.S. and the location of their jobs. If they threaten to quit or leave, then their families are threatened and can, in some cases, even be murdered. Entertainment industry. Some of you may be familiar with the circus performers that come from China, very high quality, amazing acrobatic athletes. And then there are sort of a second tier that travel in places like Las Vegas and smaller towns. And they've uncovered that quite often they're actually trafficked. They have no choice but to perform. And then they're created and held in subhuman conditions when they're not on stage. Victims are often tricked into leaving their country. A good example of this is the model industry. So traffickers will go into Russia, they'll bring these young, beautiful women in, they'll tell them that they're going to bring them to New York, make them into models. They confiscate their passports, And then once they get here, they find out that it's all a lie. Their families have actually sort of signed documents saying they can come. Makes it difficult to prosecute. And then they're created and held as sex slaves. If they make any attempt to escape, their families are threatened, and they just take photos of their daughters or mothers or in their home country. They show it to the traffic victim, and they say, look, here's your daughter yesterday, you know, playing at school, and if you do anything, we're going to kill her. So sex prostitution is the number one type of human trafficking, but it exists in all sectors, including the people that may be washing your cars. Quite often they don't speak English, they're unfamiliar with U.S. culture, they may be confined to small workspaces, and sometimes they're just fearful of being deported because they know if they go back to their home country, their families will be in danger. Now this is talking about the international human slavery practices, but it actually exists in the United States, and the most common victim are runaway teens. The average street life now for a runaway teen is about 36 hours in a major city before they're approached by someone that's going to help them. You know, you're pretty clear that you're a runaway teen. You're at the bus station, you're at the train station, you're looking pretty destitute. You're going down to where the other teens are hanging out, and these traffickers find them and offer to bring them into a home, and once they get there, they find out they're going to be turned into prostitutes. Again, they find out where their families are and threaten their families if they attempt to escape. And they're trafficked and traded, were on Craigslist, and some of you may be familiar that the U.S. attorneys finally gathered together, and Craigslist has now stopped posting adult services sex trade due to this. So this isn't confined to just international, but also local. The victims often don't know sometimes that they're actually human slaves. The example of the nurses is a really good example of this. They just think that they took on a bargain of debt and they can't pay the debt off, and they don't realize that they're services will never be paid. Sometimes you get a Stockholm syndrome where they begin to identify. This happens a lot with the teens that are picked up off the street. It's the only safe adult that seems to be feeding them and clothing them. And sometimes they are moved and crated so much that they don't even know where to go to get help. They can't even barely keep track of where they are because they're put into truck crates and just move from city to city every few weeks. So, what can we do about this? Well, as it turns out, healthcare providers are very often the frontline people that can identify human traffic victims. As I mentioned, it's very hard to prosecute them. And this is what actually brought me into this topic, because I was working at a school-based health center taking care of some young girls, and they had been enrolled in school because they had done a truancy sweep at the local hotels where a lot of the homeless families are, and the traffickers feared they would be caught if they saw these girls hanging out. They don't get as much sex traffic business in the early morning, so they allowed them to come to school between 9 and 12, and they kept coming in with all these health complaints and issues and things. And before I really realized what was going on, I lost track of them. About 6 months later, I happened to be at a conference where someone talked about key identifiers for human traffic victims, and my shoulders slumped over and tears welled up in my eyes because I realized I had these victims in front of me and I just didn't know it. Because eventually, the human commodity will have some interference of their health when they get treated in these subhuman conditions, and they will seek out health care in emergency rooms, primary care clinics, your safety net clinics, often places where public health nurses are, and often places where nurse practitioners are. So we're right on the front lines of identification. So this is where I live in Sacramento, and it's where UC Davis is. And we're actually caught in a human trafficking triangle that goes between Las Vegas, the Los Angeles region, and then the San Jose-Sacramento corridor. So the minute the law enforcement agencies get hot on a human traffic situation, they'll just crate them and send them to Las Vegas. When Las Vegas gets hot, they go to LA and they just bounce around. So it was in the middle of this situation that we realized that we needed to do something very direct about human trafficking in our community, and so we joined one of the Rescue and Restore coalitions. There are many of these now opening up across the United States. We were amongst the first 20, and it's where you create a transdisciplinary coalition to examine issues of human trafficking. Primarily, they tend to be law enforcement because that's where the real stoppage is going to occur. But I was very fortunate to work with Dr. Elizabeth Miller and myself, and we represented the healthcare aspects of this on our coalition. We knew that there was a problem. We knew that we were seeing certainly the runaway teens. We had some domestic situations where a woman was brought in, as I mentioned, for domestic work. She escaped out of a window. Actually, the man was having sex with her sometimes up to 5 times a day. She escaped out a window and ran to a church. And we also became aware of a few of the massage parlors that were more just trafficked women. So the police wanted to move forward, but we really didn't know. We didn't have data. We weren't sure. We didn't have any resources. We didn't have money. What we had was a lot of people that really cared and wanted to do something about this national and international tragedy. As I mentioned, there's a lot of health issues. Mental health, as you can well imagine, infection, mutilation, chronic back pain. And the victims can walk in with any of these complaints. And if you're not aware that someone's standing next to them, they don't have control over their own ID and the other things that you have to learn to ask, you can definitely miss it. This is to say nothing of the other kinds of health issues. And so it didn't take long to really convince our faculty at Sac State that human trafficking was really a health problem, a public health problem, and we really ought to get our students moving on this. So what we did is we started a rapid community assessment. We used the same procedures that they use after disaster and designed a plan to go out and look at all the agencies that may have been contacted with human trafficking victims. We established fiscal resources. We got a very tiny grant, just $3,000, to help us with some of the data collection. We got students together, and then we worked with students from the McGeorge School of Law, the criminal justice system, and our public health nursing students. And they, each group put on a team leader, and they designed exactly how to do this. They did the rapid community assessment. They organized it, did all components of it. I do want to emphasize that no student came in contact with any traffic victims. This is obviously a very dangerous place for your students to be, so we were looking at the community agencies. Ultimately, we were able to distribute 1,000 pieces of campaign material. Any of you can go to rescueandrestore.com and order the health provider kit. We identified lots of gaps in services, but the most important thing is we were able to get about $500,000 grant because we finally had the data. We had something that was describing human trafficking, and the students did this, and they also helped write the grant. Just to let you know, because it was so short and in the middle of their semester, the students were a little stressed, but they also were very compelled, I think, about the mission, which added to the stress. They cared about it, so they wanted to do a good job, and maybe they felt it was a little hard. Sometimes the agencies didn't welcome them. Surprisingly enough, we had the hardest time getting data out of law enforcement agencies. That was kind of surprising. Some of the students worked better than others. That won't be news to most of you. So human trafficking is an international social justice issue. Students can be involved. They can direct, design, and implement rapid community assessment projects. I would like to say that I'm going to be using RCAs for several issues in our community with students because you only have them for a semester, and this is a really effective way of getting them involved in some very compelling health topics in a way that they can do very meaningful things in a short period of time, and that it's important to work transdisciplinary. Law students learn from nurses, nurses learn from lawyers, lawyers learn from law enforcement. It's going to take everybody to solve this problem. And those are just some resources for you. We can leave those up while we're making the changes, and I welcome your questions.